House Armed Services Committee Vice Chairman Mac Thornberry is in the middle of a bipartisan effort to reform defense acquisition policies. The goal is to save money and inspire new technology development in the defense industrial base. But Thornberry's effort is the latest of about 8 million efforts to reform defense acquisition. Ideas like that floating around Washington for many years. Steve Grundman is former Deputy Defense Undersecretary for Industrial Affairs and Installations, now a fellow at the Atlantic Council. Steve, welcome to the program. This conversation began between you and I last week as we talked about the fact that Congressman Thornberry's effort is just the latest, and there are all kinds of ideas and initiatives and forums and panels and councils and so on looking at defense acquisition reform in Washington. And Steve, it seems we hear similar ideas on an ongoing basis, but none of the ideas seem to get implemented. So the conversation that you and I had is, what's the holdup to getting some of this stuff implemented that seems to have a pretty good basis of agreement around it? What do you think, in the time that you've had to think about this since you and I had this chat, what do you think are the holdups? And then we'll get into what some of the ideas are that could change things.
Well, I don't mean to answer with too highbrow a response.
That's not possible on this show.
Okay, since you asked, here's my thinking about it, is that now and for decades, we have mostly been trying to deal with this as what a Harvard professor, Ron Heifetz, would call a technical problem, meaning, you know, something which we simply need to learn how to do something different. Whereas the complexity of government acquisition and the complexity of the things we're trying to buy through government acquisition to improve them is going to take what Ron Heifetz would call adaptive change, where you don't just have to do things differently, you have to think differently about what you're doing, not to be too glib about it. And I know that may sound maybe esoteric or something like that, but I actually think the first thing we need to do is take up some of the premises of the way we think about what we're buying and how the market is going to work to get us good value. And actually, with respect to at least a couple of these dimensions, maybe probably more than I haven't thought of, but at least a couple of them, I think we almost literally have to invert the mindset that we bring to these things. And after we have started thinking differently about the problem of government acquisition, then we can figure out what to do differently. But I think we're trying to leap to the sort of technical solution when we haven't reconsidered what we're really up to here in the 21st century, in an age of brand new technologies and companies, and frankly also a different political context.
No, I see exactly where you're getting at, Steve, and I see where you're coming from on the highbrow thing, because there is a portion of that that is fairly intellectual. There's also a portion of it, though, Steve, that is pretty simple in my mind, and it's the idea of, if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you're getting. And as I referred to when we began this conversation, and as you and I discussed last week, we've been doing the same thing when it comes to looking at how we are going to change the acquisition system. We go back and we look at DFARS, or we look at the regulations and we analyze the regulations, and we go, what should we change to make it easier for us to do whatever it is we've decided we need to do easier or faster or cheaper or whatever we've decided the criteria should be. And so that part of it is pretty simple in my mind. And so that takes me then intellectually to what you're talking about this inversion concept of, let's go 180 degrees opposite of that and think differently about how we want to get to the end result, which is the warfighter and the commander has the very best materials that are available to do whatever they need to do to execute their mission. That doesn't necessarily have to be the most complicated, most high-tech thing. One of the things at one of the conferences where we saw each other last week, Steve, that was pointed out was, in Iraq, in the very most violent parts of the Iraq war, the most commonly used weapons against American forces were IEDs and AK-47s, the technology for which has been around for decades. Mm-hmm. And so what we found in the counterinsurgency efforts that Dr. Noggle and General Petraeus advanced was, you don't always have to fight low technology with high technology, and we saw a lot of success just with through manpower. At least many people believe that was the case. So the points that you're laying out, when you consider them in turn, make perfect sense. So what are the elements then that we need to look at of those broader ideas to break it down into action steps?
Well, let me, yes, I'd welcome the opportunity to go from the esoteric to something more concrete, but that I think is still directly related. Let me take up the point about IEDs and the strategy, if you will, that we adopted in the mid-2000s for countering the threat to IEDs. There was a lot to it that we're not going to cover in this conversation, but certainly one of the premises, and this is, I think this is instructive. One of the premises of JAIDO, the Joint Integrated IED Defeat Organization, didn't quite get that acronym right, but one of the premises was, let's quickly see what in the heck is out there in the world that could deal with this problem. That is to say, they actively encouraged a diversity, I'm going to emphasize the word diversity, of approaches to dealing with the problem. And that is an example of one of these inversions of the reflexes, the mindset that we bring, we have tended, or we have over an accumulation of time, tended to bring to the problem of acquisition. And that is, there is a strong tendency, a strong mindset toward not diversity, toward uniformity and scale. Right. I mean, let's go to the other end of the spectrum in so many different ways and take the Joint Strike Fighter. Right. So we're building one. And I mean, let's not go into the details. Everyone, all your listeners know what I'm talking about. But the approach to that was anything but the approach of the JAIDO office, which was all comers. Let's see a diversity of approaches to solving this problem and see what we can come up with. Now, there's hair on that story as well, the JAIDO story. But nevertheless, it's an example of where I'm saying, let's not start at the technical problem of the FAR and the DFAR. Let's start at the way we think about what creates value and what doesn't. I would argue diversity creates value. Scale and uniformity, which is the prevailing mindset of the acquisition system about how to create value, might be completely wrong.
You told me, Steve Grundman of the Atlantic Council, my guest, you told me two things that I should keep in mind as potential drivers to really get some of these reforms going. One is scale and one is risk. Tell me about your thoughts about the scale piece of this, Steve.
Okay, so the scale piece of it is I've more or less introduced with my use of the term diversity, right? So there is a mindset behind almost all acquisition reform of which I'm familiar over the last 30 years, that the way to create value, or maybe even more simplistically, reduce cost, is to get scale, is to leverage scale efficiencies, right? Buy in bulk, buy at Costco in bulk, and you can get things cheaper. And that general principle is true. But the problem is, I think we have taken that principle and applied it in places where we have, gone around the bend in the curve, and we're starting because of there are diseconomies of scale as well, right? If you get beyond the bend of the curve, then the overhead it takes to manage scale and the complexity involved in integrating large scale starts to bite back and starts, in fact, to detract from the scale efficiencies that you might enjoy. So that's one example where I wonder if we shouldn't start the next season of acquisition transformation. Let's just even stop using the word reform with a mindset that says, let's be simplistic, small is beautiful. Let's figure out how to extract value from small and wean ourselves of this reflex about scale efficiencies. That's one example. The other that you mentioned is risk. I'll be really brief, and it's simply that the other mindset in the acquisition system right now is risk is bad. Right. And so there's all manner of behaviors that we enact in order to either minimize or eliminate risk. And we do that from what I would call a consumer mindset. And I wish we could adopt what I would call an investor's mindset. An investor's mindset appreciates that risk is just the other side of the coin from value. If you want to create value, you got to take risk. You have to manage it, right? You don't want to face yourself with system-wide risks and things like that. But this whole mindset that risk is bad, I think, is wrong.
The part of that that worries me then, as far as using your principles to move the ball forward, Steve, is that the Defense Department, if anything, is pushing more toward the consumer mindset, because they're asking more of the defense. They're asking the defense companies to take on more of the risk and to make the bigger investments in R&D. And some of the companies have said, fine, we'll go ahead and do that. Some are a little more apprehensive about whether they'll see the benefits of it on the back end. But rather than becoming more involved in the risk game themselves, DOD is pushing that more off on the defense industrial base.
But that can work. You just have to have the right contract, right? You and I both heard the president of Space Exploration Technology last week or 2 weeks ago laud the Space Act, the public-private partnership that SpaceX has with NASA for developing the commercial crew as well as the commercial cargo solution.
Right.
Again, we can't be too ham-fisted about what we mean by these things, but it suffices to say, you know, that was as effusive as I have seen an executive in the aerospace and defense industry doing government business about her contractual relationship with her customer and how effective it was at incentivizing good behavior and giving them a chance at an adequate return on what portion of the thing they'd invested in.
We just have a couple of minutes left, Steve, but I want to go back to the scale point quickly. You talked about the bite back and the uneconomies or diseconomies of scale. I apologize for the improper terminology.
Uneconomies is probably as good.
Well, let me make sure I understand what you're talking about in context. Let's say we've decided that strategically we need 180 F-35s, but we perceive it at least to be a better deal to have 200 of them. The problem, as you're describing it, is now we have 200 F-35s, 20 more than we wanted, and we thought we got a bargain up front, but now we've got to take care of them for the rest of our lives, and that's not free. There's a cost associated with that that we'll have to incur on an ongoing basis. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
Not exactly. I'm thinking more back at the early part of this program when we decided we need 3,000 new fighter attack aircraft in three services of the military. And the way we're going to get them at the price that we think we can afford is by rolling them all into one program for three services, and since then many other militaries around the world. And right, and the fundamental principle behind that was one of scale efficiencies. We were going to get lots of scale efficiencies out of doing that, and I think, and I like the Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35. I'm sort of stepping back from it and saying, but, you know, did our expectations of those scale efficiencies take account of the complexity that we're overlaying on it, the additional overhead it would take to manage such a large and complex program, the inflexibility that gets built into a large-scale enterprise, the vulnerability that our forces might face when they're all flying the same airplane? You know, what do we do when somebody comes up with the countermeasure to the F-35?